My name is Brandon Hoy, co-owner of Roberta's, a super duper awesome place. Roberta's is a very, 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 very proud sponsor of the Heritage Radio Network. We're also super awesome. Thank you, Heritage.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Welcome back to Roberta's.
Welcome back, Mike. It seems like we were just here an hour ago.
It's been a big day in Heritage Radio history today.
Yes.
A double dose of Mike and Judy.
Arts and seizures. I'm arts, that's seizures.
And we're here today with our guests Simon Rich and Farley Katz.
To celebrate the publication of their new book, The Married Kama Sutra. One thing I need to know, boys, are you guys married?
To each other or otherwise?
Farley was married.
That explains some of the tone.
Uh-huh. And I was an observer.
Nice. Oh, really, Simon? How
sometimes so? It feels like I was also an observer in my own marriage.
Aww.
I want to give just a little quick bio on the guys because they're both very accomplished. Simon has written for Saturday Night Live and The New Yorker, and his books include What in God's Name and The Last Girlfriend on Earth. And Farley is a staff cartoonist for The New Yorker and the author of Journal of a Schoolyard Bully. So these guys got CVs as long as my arm. Very glad to see you guys.
Yeah.
Thanks so much for having us. Really fun.
Hey, Farley, do you know our other, we have another friend of the Arts and Seizure show, Carolita Johnson. Are you friends with
her? Oh, yeah, yeah. She's great. She's another cartoonist at The New Yorker.
You are our second New Yorker cartoonist.
All right.
We've got to work on our third, the Catman.
The Catman's going to come. Well, this book is, after a fashion, sort of an extended New Yorker cartoon. I've never been married, you know, so I don't know this nightmare of which you speak, of which you describe, and what's been described as the world's least erotic sex manual, because, of course, my life being single is just, you know, orgy after orgy.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I go from girl to girl. It's like being on tour in Van Halen without the bad music.
Or the poon. Have you gotten an angry call from your ex-wife?
From her lawyers. They like to make a lot of phone calls. They can bill for all of them. Bill me for all of them.
Yeah,
a portion of the proceeds of this book actually go directly to Farley's ex-wife's lawyer.
The Farley Katz Divorce Fund.
You guys are breaking my heart. You're so young and so cynical.
Well, we think, you know, there's some hope, I think, within these pages.
There is some hope towards the end.
Yeah.
Towards the very, very end.
Yeah, there's at least some attempted eroticism towards the end.
They almost do it.
Almost.
Almost do it. Well, it's like same-sex marriage, right? That's the joke. After you get married, it's all the same sex.
Well, we think, yeah, maybe, I mean, there's room for a same-sex married Kama Sutra as well, or...
Yeah, I have a lot more bills to pay, so it would be good if we could sell that.
Yeah. Oh, how long were you married for?
You know, a year plus, but felt, a little bit longer than that. a little bit longer.
I've been with the same guy for 9 years. We're not married. And I have to tell you, every day is the new erotic experience. Once you've, witnessed someone taking a dump and, it's just nonstop doing it. So I think you're a little jaded, and that's not quite right.
Yeah, I'm blessed by having a girlfriend who is also a great homemaker and is wonderfully domestic, and it's kind of a turn on. I gotta say, every time, forget about taking the dump. That we haven't gotten to that point yet. But every time I see her do the dishes, I'm ready to rock.
God.
The original Kama Sutra, though, that thing is really daunting, even for single people.
Yes.
Having looked through those pages since I was a kid in bookstores, sneaking peeks at it, all it ever made me feel was terror. I mean, those are some...
You got legs behind the head, like all over the place. It's...
Yeah, it requires a lot of flexibility and athleticism. And so I think really one of the main reasons we wanted to write this was set the bar a little bit lower.
Oh, boy.
More attainable.
Yeah.
More achievable.
The bar is so low, I'm afraid I'm going to trip over it. Well, Judy, you're both a pornographer and an eroticist and a great athlete. So have you actually...
Yeah.
So have you actually tried to do all the positions in the Kama Sutra?
No. No.
You didn't do it and blog
no.
about it?
No, no, no. I don't... No. I'm boring. I'm like vanilla... No, I've done the dishwasher thing in their book. I've done every position in their book.
Explain to the kids at home. The kids were all over 18. What exactly the dishwasher position in this book entails?
Simon?
Sure, yeah. I can read it. It's a position that that's illustrated in the book, and it goes, when the man is loading the dishwasher and the woman must come over because he is loading it wrong, it is called the dishwasher position. And then there's a picture of two fully clothed married people standing over the dishwasher. And that's one of many positions you'll find.
Yeah, we did that one almost every day. That was
This is autobiographical. Huh?
That was one of the good ones.
So sad.
I don't know.
I'm an eternal romantic, you know. I'm an optimist about these things. You know, like I always say, people talk about, you know, because I have been a bachelor for so long, and I would like to be married and have, like, an ongoing, successful, mutually supportive adult relationship. And people say, so, Mike, you're ready to settle down? And I said, no, I want to settle up. Because settling down... No, it's not a joke. I mean, seriously, because this idea of being with the same person to me should be opening up possibilities, not crashing, you know, down. It should be like, now everything is possible.
Yeah,
it removes a lot of the bullshit.
I think there's some positive...
Again, I'm an idealist.
Yeah, like, well here's like, an upbeat one.
Joe, you got some music for us while we do a little reading of this book?
This is sort of from page 12. When the toddler is at the grandmother's and the man and the woman have plans to go out, but decide instead to drug themselves with Ambien at 7:30 p.m. because all they truly crave is a sweet release of sleep, it is called the Waltz of the Sloths. So we felt that was, you know, it's sort of an upbeat date. And then the picture is them enjoying the effects of Ambien.
You guys ever have Ambien sex?
Is that a thing?
It is a thing.
That's what Tiger Woods was taking Ambien.
Oh, you load up on it and then...
Well, I think his Ambien sex was sort of like Ambien eating or Ambien driving, where he's not conscious of it. But it's also a thing where you're using it as a recreational drug to... I mean, I like Ambien, but I see no recreational possibility to it whatsoever. I mean, it's got all the recreational possibilities of being hit in the head with a baseball bat. I mean, it's just like, dunk, and that's why I like it. It's a dummy pill. But apparently, kids your age, like you guys, youngsters, you know, find recreational purposes for all sorts of prescription drugs these days. You take a tab of Ambien, and you're there, the giant black wave that overwhelms you. Doing it, and I don't know. This is what they tell me. Kids in Williamsburg, all the kids are doing it.
They're doing doing Ambien out there.
As a recreational drug.
Wow.
So says someone in their late 40s. We're probably completely wrong. Do you guys have kids?
No.
No.
Not
okay.
That I know of.
Yeah.
Oh, that answer.
Just like Captain Kirk.
So you guys have... this is your first collaboration?
Well, you know, Simon and I have been... submitting stuff to the New Yorker for years, but this is the first thing that we'd done together that was accepted.
Yeah, believe it or not, we for 10 straight years, the two of us tried to get things into the magazine together, cartoons, and we actually brought with us we don't have the drawings, but we have some of the captions from some of our rejected
rejected New Yorker captions.
Yeah, we can read you some if that's all right.
Oh,
yeah.
Absolutely.
Cool.
Joe, cue the music.
So these are all cartoons that Farley and I wrote and drew, dating back really till when we first met, when we were teenagers.
Yeah, sometimes like when we work alone, we're not doing the same project together, we, you know, can come up with more reasonable things to turn into the New Yorker, but it seems like whenever we get together, they're like pretty vulgar.
I don't know. And it's probably good that we're on the radio, because these are some of these cartoons maybe wouldn't be appropriate for all audiences, but we'll just read the captions.
Oh, those fucking squares of the New Yorker.
Yeah, they don't...
The drawings are really something else.
But we'll just read the captions. This is the first one. I'll read the caption. That's not ice cream. That one was rejected.
There's another one we did was... That's not yogurt.
Those drawings were actually...
The next one is That's Not Cheese. You guys are getting out of here.
The next one is... the next one is... And I understand in hindsight why the New Yorker did not accept this one. It was, that's a lot of feces.
I actually thought that one was almost made it in. I think that made, like, second round cut.
But when that got cut, we decided we would try to, you know, get a little bit more into political satire. Because that's always a little bit more clever when you go political. And so we tried to do something a little more trenchant
So then we submitted this one, and again, it's radio, so you can't see the image, but the caption is, is that Governor Romney, or is that an Etch-a-Sketch? Oh, man, feces everywhere.
Nice.
That one also rejected.
That is heartbreaking.
But eventually, after about a decade, we figured out by putting clothes on the figures.
Yeah, and taking out, like, some of the feces.
Yeah, most of it. And that's how we ended up with this one.
Judy, you're a longtime New Yorker reader, right?
Yes.
I find it such a slog lately, to be honest with you. I it's one of the few magazines I do subscribe to, and I always like it, but honestly, this is exactly what that magazine needs. There's naked people and feces.
Yeah, I think their regular readers might be a little offended by the feces.
Well, it's time to shake up the squares a little bit. You know, I mean, seriously, do we really need, like, another, like, 50,000 word piece about, like, the Middle East peace process?
You know, and sometimes in the middle of those long pieces, they'll slip in just, like, whole paragraphs about feces, because they know that
it's no one's really reading them.
Just to check to see if anyone's, you know.
Yeah, also in the masthead, the circulation report, there's some pretty dirty jokes they sort of bury right in there, you know, right under the ABC audit numbers.
How did you two meet? You said you grew up together, or you just met when you were teenagers, or?
Yeah, well, actually, Simon and I have been friends for a long time, and then we didn't know where we were going to go to school, and then a good friend of ours actually passed away, and is by the name of Ivory, and so then we took Ivory's ashes and we planted a marijuana plant, and we smoked that marijuana plant,
uh-huh.
And it, you know, made us like these. Ivory's ghost came and appeared to us and told us, you know, the information that we needed to pass our SAT tests, and so then we went off to Harvard together. And things got a little interesting at Harvard.
Yeah, the ghost stayed with us and continued to give us advice, but the advice wasn't always socially, you know, constructive.
Exactly. And then at some point, the dean was really giving us a hard time, and the Ivory's marijuana plant ran out, and then we were on our own. And to see how that turned out, perhaps you could rent the movie How High.
Which is based on our experience.
Yep.
It's a nicer story than sorting your dad's ashes, I guess, like Keith Richards did. That's a beautiful.
And here you
story.
Are on the Arts and Seizure Show.
So I was looking at Simon. I was looking at your Wikipedia bio thing because I do a lot of research here. I like that you're known for being the second youngest writer for Saturday Night Live.
Yeah,
that's so weird. Like after there's the youngest.
After what? Say it again.
After there's the youngest. Like, is there a third youngest?
Maybe. Yeah. I'm not sure if I even was a second. I'm not sure if that's accurate or not. But I've got a feeling there's probably. I mean, that show's been on for 100 years. There's probably like chimney sweeps he wrote for that show. Right. You know, when they were like 12 years old. So
during the Eddie Murphy years. Or something.
Well, yeah, Eddie Murphy was like a teenager, I think, when he was writing for that show. So.
So how do you guys generally work? Do the pictures come first, words?
I have a caption. You tell me the picture.
Okay.
Okay? Here's the caption. There's something you don't see every day.
That's a really good. Yeah, I mean my mind just goes to feces.
Yeah.
But I don't know, what would you say?
I would say a man pointing, and it's not one feces, but two. And he's pointing at both the feces.
Or maybe a curiously shaped feces.
Yeah.
Now we're talking.
The face of Jesus.
This is really turning into quite the comedy workshop here.
Definitely.
Hey, Joe, why don't we take a break? Joe, can you spin that great big up song we heard earlier today? Is that a yes, Joe, King of the Engineers?
I'm working on it. I'm nervous.
This is the Arts and Seizure Show, broadcasting live from Roberta's here in Bushwick on the Heritage Radio Network with Simon and Farley. This is good. We're going to come back. We're gonna collaborate, and then we're going to take over the New Yorker.
In a room, in a
Like what you hear so far? Support the network and become a member. Membership helps us bring you the best food radio in the world and gives you access to thousands of dollars in discounts at the sustainably minded businesses that support us. To become a member, visit heritageradionetwork.org today.
So much, Joe, the rock star engineer, back from tour.
The big ups. You sound a lot like a young Lou Reed there, Joe. I'm telling you.
Oh my!
Don't take the heroin, Joe.
Trust me.
Stay away from the smack, Joe.
I will.
So Farley and Simon have a couple of book thingy signings coming up. Why don't you tell us about what you've got going on?
Yeah, this Monday the 4th. Is that right?
Yeah.
We will be at Book Court in Brooklyn at 7 p.m. to do a reading and signing, so just come out.
And we're going
to
be showing some slides of some of our favorite rejected New Yorker cartoons.
Now, these are legit rejected cartoons, ones that you've submitted with actually expecting them or hoping that they might be accepted.
Yeah. These are our true best efforts, and you can see them and then try to deduce why. Maybe they didn't all make the cut.
So what is the process, actually? If I had a cartoon idea, could I just call up, hello, New Yorker, this is Mike from Arts and Seizures, and send them my fantastic version of There's Something You Never See?
That's totally the way publishing works.
Yeah. Who do I got to know? Who do I got to fuck?
David,
he's
Brandon.
Sitting right here. Yeah. Got
my pants are off for a reason. Let's go. Let's get wild.
I thought you would have taken the hint by now.
Yeah. Duh.
No, you can just go. You can just send them into New Yorker. You can just address them the New Yorker, mail in your cartoons. I think you need to draw them as well. Just send them in.
That is never going to happen.
It's not in this lifetime. No way. Cold calling the New Yorker. I don't see it somehow.
Did you always want to be a cartoonist for the New Yorker, or were you more into Superman and stuff growing up?
It was either cartoonist or superhero.
Yes.
Oh, okay.
No.
Well, it's so urbane, so genteel, the New Yorker.
Yeah,
so
I mean,
civilized.
No, I always, those are, I've always enjoyed those cartoons, and I, at some point, Simon and I, we run out of feces cartoons, and so that's, when we can do things that they might accept.
Surely must you be able to sell those feces cartoons elsewhere.
We've tried. a lot of our rejected New Yorker cartoons were rejected also by other magazines.
So these are multi-rejects.
Some
of them
even Mad Magazine, which is world renowned for its, its display of feces cartoons, they don't accept them anymore.
What about Cracked?
Cracked
is no longer a magazine.
It's now online, but we've both contributed to Mad, right?
You
got some cartoons in there, yeah. But I used to write for Mad Magazine back in college, but the ones we did together again never worked out. I think a lot of collaborators when they join forces, it's like they're greater than the sum of their parts.
Mm-hmm.
And I think for us, it's often, it's whatever the opposite of that is. Less than the sum. Less than the sum
like
of their...
quartered instead of doubled.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly, yeah.
Much like Patrick Martins and I, where we came in both ready to rock and ended up with something that kind of demeaned both of us.
So you come from a very a newsy family. Your dad's Frank Rich. Your stepmom works for the Times too. And did you always
ink running in your veins?
Was this the thing? Did you ever just want to be like a motocross driver or a garbage man or anything? Or did you always know you'd
stripper.
Write?
Well, I think everybody dreams of being a motocross something. Yeah, but I don't know. I guess my big hope is that nobody tuning in right now was expecting Frank Rich and ended up with the Married Kama Sutra, because that would be
they might be
that would be a rough afternoon if you're going in expecting trenchant political commentary, and you end up with the dishwasher position. So my apologies to anybody who's accidentally tuning in.
Now, what are your folks thinking about this this somewhat less than romantic sex novel that you guys have perpetrated?
I don't know the answer to that question.
You show your parents your work, right?
Yeah,
I mean, when I was a pornographer, my parents were not very fucking happy.
Were you a pornographer?
I think at some point I still am. Yes, I am a pornographer. I was the editor-in-chief of Screw Magazine, and I've written for Hustler. I've written enough Penthouse letters to actually put a down payment on an apartment. Judy, too, slung the filth.
That's so cool.
Insert tab A into slot B.
Back when porn writing used to pay.
Wow, and so this is sort of like...
These microphones are all sort of dongish. I mean, these look like
your book is what we aspire to. This is successful. It's a legitimate publisher. Listen, I mean, it's got a nice, this quality from top to bottom. We aspire to this. We envy you.
Coming out right in time for Christmas too. I'm surprised they didn't wait till Valentine's Day, which is also covered in the book.
our hope is that we're trying to break into the wedding gift market, but we're also trying to corner the divorce gift market, which we think is untapped.
Yeah, well, they're having divorce parties now. I mean, there's a divorce section of Huffington Post. I mean, you guys are on it.
I think we're ahead of the curve there.
Yeah,
the divorce section. These are gifts that you give to the person you've just divorced, or give to your friend who got divorced to celebrate that they got
your
away from
your friend who dumped that loser who finally wised up.
Yeah,
ditch that bitch. Yeah,
it's also what's great about this book. Is that there's very little text in it. So you can say over the weekend, like, if somebody's like, what do you do over the weekend? You can say, I read a book. And people will assume you're very intelligent for having read, the entirety of a book.
I gotta say, that's what I look for in a book, is little text, big pictures.
Yeah.
I'm not very bright. It's just the way it is. Fucking internet ruined everything. I can't focus for more than 1 second on anything.
Oh, we're the same way.
Dostoevsky, David Foster Wallace, fuck that. Who's got time for that nonsense? Never mind that 50,000 word piece on Peace in the Middle East.
I'm having a blank moment. Yeah,
a blank moment. I'm stymied by the cynicism of these young people. Now, I'm the child of divorced parents. Okay, and my parents are my father passed away, but up until the end, they were very bitter. You couldn't mention the other's name without like getting a dirty look. And they raised three actually fairly responsible, successful children, but the bitterness just permeated everything. And I'm fairly optimistic, and my brother. So I've sort of overcompensated the other direction by doting and showering love and other wives and children. So I see this. I see something very cynical. I see boys, and I just want to cry.
You should just cuddle them.
It breaks my fucking heart. Can we have a group hug? Can we do that on the show?
Can we do it?
We had kittens on this fucking show last week, Judy.
We're group hugging right now. It's radio. You could say they're doing everything. Well, I wish Paul
you're squeezing. You're squeezing too hard.
But are your parents still together?
They are. That they're both attorneys, and this book actually led me to have a lot of time one-on-one with a group of attorneys, my ex-wife's attorneys, and so it feels like I'm even closer to them. That's nice.
Did your parents handle your divorce?
No, you can't. Yeah.
It's like a doctor operating.
Exactly. You have to get your own expensive lawyers who won't do anything for free, and they charge you, and your ex-wife's attorneys charge you. And
you'd think after just a year or two, you'd get like a divorce discount, like how much could be involved?
Well, they got like a frequent flyer miles.
Well, just like, a 20-year marriage should take longer to disengage from than a...
Well, I'm a cartoonist, so, my vast cartoon fortune. Yeah,
I know many cartoonists.
Yeah.
The cat's estate.
Sam, what about you? There's a special someone in your life that you're looking forward to marrying and divorcing?
Oh, right now, my main goal is just to focus on other friends' relationships and try to exploit them, to financial end. So,
well, I'm sure you'd be sitting on top of a pile of gold after the world's least erotic sex manual comes up. What does your dad think about this?
Oh God, I shiver to think what he must think about it. I think I don't know.
I'm sure your parents are just happy you're making a living and not living off them.
That's what my parents said when I was selling the most pernicious filth ever foisted upon humankind when I was writing those porn books. Like, I'm just happy he's employed.
Yeah, I think that's really valid. I mean, anything to not have to live inside their living room, I think it probably makes them happy.
So what's next? You guys are obviously going to promote this book, do some tours, but you're writing for television and movies. You have some stuff coming up?
Yeah, I've... got a pilot going. I my last book before this was called The Last Girlfriend on Earth, and it was a collection of dating stories, which, you know, I guess the characters are a little bit younger than the ones in the Married Kama Sutra, but and we're doing a pilot for FX based on that, and hoping for good things.
Simon, yeah. I'll have you know you're speaking right now to Judy McGuire, one of the foremost dating and relationship advice columnists in the history of American
letters. Nobody's ever heard of.
Date it's girl.
Fun. What's your favorite type of stuff to answer questions about?
Let me see. Mostly the really satisfying ones are, how can I get laid from men? Because it's so easy. I've actually had thank you notes from this, like, don't sleep on a futon, invest in a bed,
uh-huh.
Brush your teeth regularly, go to the dentist, you know, wash. I had a guy thank me. He hadn't had sex in like 5 years, and I wrote this detailed list, and that was satisfying.
That's great.
All you had to do was wash the parts?
The bed and stuff, too. The bed.
Farley, do you need a pen? Do you want to take notes?
The bed is very important.
I just have a transcript.
The non-futon.
Yeah.
Because when a guy sleeps on a futon, I did date someone who used like rolled up sweaters as a pillow and stuff. Like, sheets are really important.
Yeah, when I was in college, when I was 19 or 20, I lived in a roommate situation, and the living room became so filthy that at a certain point we decided not to try to clean it anymore because it was just too daunting. And instead, we would get the local free newspaper and just paper the floor repeatedly, as if we were animals inside of a cage.
Avant-gardist. You say animal, I say avant-garde.
Well, some women might want to pretend that they're hamsters.
That didn't help us dating wise, but it really made it way easier because every week when the newspaper came out, we would just freshly paper the room.
Would you throw out the old papers?
No, just paper. Put it over. Just
so
keep putting it over.
Nice and cushiony after a while.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, unfortunately, with the decline of the newspaper industry, that's no longer an option for today's young men.
Today,
I don't know how they're going to paper their
collateral damage due to the death of print media.
I know.
Who would have expected that to happen? That print media dies, and these guys lost their interior design program.
Exactly.
You know, I'll tell you what. I had a book for you. Judy McGuire has got more dating horror stories than any person I know, and I can see that as a richly illustrated book.
I know. I'm actually rewriting the story that I've made my bones on for so many years. The guy who crapped himself in my bed. I'm writing yet another version of that for a website I'm writing.
IMAX 3D. That's what I'm looking forward to.
Were you in the bed when he crapped it?
I was about to get in the bed. I was all gussied up, came into the bedroom, and he was passed out on his belly with shit pouring out of his boxers.
So you saw it in progress.
Or immediately after.
Immediately after. Gotcha. Yeah.
And that's it. That's a New Yorker cartoon waiting to happen.
Yeah. I think so. Or a cover. Why not a cover?
A cover. That's fantastic. Well, I'll tell you what, Simon Farley, this is actually a very, very funny book, The World's Least Erotic Sex Manual, The Married Kama Sutra. We're glad to have you guys on the Arts and Seizure Show.
Book Court tomorrow.
Book Court in Brooklyn tomorrow. It's a great place. You'll have a good time there.
Barnes & Noble, Upper East Side.
Yep, on Wednesday the 6th.
Where?
7 p.m.
Okay.
And where can we find you guys on the internet?
MarriedKamaSutra.com.
Thanks so much for coming.
Thank you so much for having us.
Thank
Super
you guys.
Fun.
All right, so for Judy McGuire, I'm Mike Edison, and Joe, the King of Engineers. We'll see you guys next week. We've got our friend Mike Albo coming by, Arts and Seizures. See ya.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.